Now for the medicine Buddha stanza and mantra. For those with the white binder, please look at the blue sheet. Bhagawan with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to medicine Buddha, lapis light. Te ata om bekanze, bekanze, maha bekanze, bekanze, raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze, bekanze, maha bekanze, bekanze, raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze, bekanze, maha bekanze, bekanze, raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Te ata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Now let's read the four measurables three times in English. May all sentient beings have happiness as a cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hate for enemies. Now if you turn the page to 37, at the bottom there are two mantras. So let's chant Shenrezig mantra eight times. That's the Buddha of great compassion, and Green Taurus mantra seven times, and she's the deity of enlightened activity. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Children are welcome to go to their classrooms.
Short meditations. Please, would you mind take one moment to introduce yourself? I think I have a meeting, one meeting.
Oh, you have a meeting?
Yeah, here. Yeah. I will stay.
You'll stay?
Yeah, my meeting.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for, sorry to interrupt your wonderful conversation. few things. The meditations, so many people, you know, showing interest into meditations. So just want to share with you the purpose of meditations. What is happening in our life? Or in our existence? There's actions, verbal action, physical action, mental actions. There's no three types of actions, sometimes called three drawers. So those actions, then, you know, is like powered by our thought. Thought beyond action is not all the thought beyond action is something healthy or good or positive. Thought, no. Every action is produced by thought. Though within the thought, you know, some of them are unhealthy or negative thought. So then these actions and the thought behind the action is like wild wild wave. Then create this, you know, kind of produce those wild wave of action and thought. Can you imagine how many of them, you know? Then create this, you know, three types of problems. So, then the three types of problems is considered as like crocodile, alligator, or crocodile. Which one is more scary? Which one? Crocodile is more scary. So you create the three types of problems. Problem change. Then, you know, you could say a problem, you know, such as like, you know, physical pain, mental pain, all of that. So like problem change, you know. So the problems, you know, that is very much related to our aggregate, you know, this aggregate, five aggregates. Uh, aging, death, sicknesses, all of that, related to the aggregate. Aging, death, sicknesses, nobody can avoid it because it comes with the package. Package, it's part of the package, there's nothing much you can do. So then top of that, you know, there's like change, you know, change. So then pain, then change, all of that, you know, the produced by, according to Buddhism, is produced by, you know, this wild wave of, you know, thought and actions. Not positive action or positive thought, you know, there's negative thought and negative actions. This what is, you know, those three types of, you know, like problems created by those action and thought. And they are like, not calm, it's like wild wave. So therefore, meditation is important. So meditation now, the purpose of meditation, you know, so just want to share with my friends here, the purpose of meditation is to liberate, you know, to liberate yourself from disturbing thought. Less negative thought, life will be better off. More negative thought, no matter where you live, what you possess, what kind of education you have, what kind of title you possess, then life is going to be difficult. From newborn child all the way to the President of the United States. So more negative thought, life is going to be difficult, equally difficult from newborn child all the way to President of the United States. Less negative thought, life is going to be better off. So therefore, so it's very, very important to understand the purpose of meditation is to reduce, minimize, subdue disturbing thought. That's the power of meditation. Gom dop nyumochwa. Gom, meditation, top, purpose or power. Nyumong, afflicted mind. Chwa, less. See, so that's the purpose of meditation. So, whatever, what kind of meditation you do, so you need to remember, including myself, need to remember the purpose, you know, is to, that's the purpose. Okay, just want to share this with you. So, then, as I mentioned last Sunday, our existence is called samsara. Very much influenced by action and thought. When you went beyond samsara, then your life is not very much influenced by action and, you know, thought, because thought is pretty much positive, you know, so then actions is the result of the thought, you know, pretty much positive. So there, and there, then, you know, what we call liberations, moksha. So then here is called samsara. Everybody, no matter how we look, who we are, what we believe, if you are part of samsara, so then, you know, your life is very much influenced by these three types of, you know, alligators. Three types of alligators, so need to understand that, you know, so need to accept the reality that life is not going to be happy all the time. So then, you know, the Rolling Stone clearly state, you know, I can get no satisfaction. No matter what you do, so what, like smelling something, eating something, looking at something, listening to something, need to understand there will be a challenge. If you really don't like that, what you need to do, what we need to do, liberate, free ourselves for good. How you do? Minimize disturbing thought. That's how you do. Is it easy? It's not easy. But there's no alternative. So, other hand, life. Last Sunday we discussed here, based on the questions that have been put on my table, we discussed, you know, some of the questions, you know, so then, what do you call, like, self-hatred, you know, you hate yourself, self-hatred. So then, according to Buddhism, you know, life is precious. precious, fragile, 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 precious, fragile, unpredictable, unpredictable. Yeah. Don't know when you'll eat. There's no clue. But we have this idea, or we'll be here forever. This mistaken concept, very mistaken concept. That concept tricks you to, you know, like they believe in the, even the very last moment, believe you still you're going to be there, you know. So precious, fragile, unpredictable, so. Therefore, you know, every day, every day is an opportunity, or you could say is a gift, opportunity, you know. So past is past. Mother Teresa says, no, not just Mother Teresa, you know, many scholars all said, past is past, there's nothing much you can do. It's all the past. Future is not here. What you have is present. So you need to focus on the present. You know? So then, you know, everything that we experience, in my case, last almost like more than 40 years, everything you experience, good or bad, it becomes like dream. So Shantideva said in Guide to Buddhist Way of Life, so this book has been written around 9th century. This book is written in 8th century or 9th century, I don't know. So, somewhere there, in that book it says, you know, whatever we experience, whether it's a positive or negative, it just become mere memory. Likewise dream. Milam dream. Nyom is experience, you know, experience in the dream, you know, whether it's a positive or negative, chased by elephant, not able to run, all the food has kind of locked, can't run, has frozen, you know, when you like, did you ever chased by elephant? I was chased by a group of yak. Can you imagine? I was chased by a group of yak, Tibetan bull animals. Yeah. Called yak, you know, not long hair. Usually, that in my hometown, we have many of them in Tibet, of course. So can you imagine that I was chased by a group of yak in America? In Charlottesville, North Carolina. There's one guy, the very rich American guy, he owns yaks, you know, in towns, in Virginia, there's farm. I've been doing white water retreat there, you know, white water retreat. So Sherab, you know, one of the Tibetan gentlemen, his elder brother, his brother is helping me, you know, to take care of my food. So I was doing retreat, 4 sessions a day. So in that farm, there's a yak, group of yak. In Tibet, what happened, you are very, like, close to yak because you feed them all the time. You touch them, you know, you separate the baby and the mother to get milk. And here, everything done by machines. You never touch them, you just throw food there, you know. They have no interaction with the human. I got so excited, you know, to not just me, every Tibetan people, when they see yak, they go so excited. They get very excited. So, and that year, so center give me one camera. Center, Kadamba Center give me as a gift one camera. Never used camera in my life. Got so excited, you know. So then the Tibetan man, he wants to feed them by hand. So there's one American guy, he said, oh, it's not a very good idea. And he said, no. And he insists he's going to feed them with his hand. And then we can't agree, so I said, okay. I wear my rope and bring the camera. So I thought maybe I'll take some fair photos, you know, while he's feeding the animals. So we went there inside the, all the yak, they get together, they kind of group them, they get together, they look at kind of like what is happening. So they all grew up in one small hill up there. So he has like a bunch of grass in his hand and he's going towards the yak. I was behind him trying to take the photo. All of a sudden, you know, because they wear normal clothes. So Yang is focusing on me because of my robe. All of a sudden, the whole Yang, they run towards me. I just ran. Probably like 30 seconds or maybe a minute, I was, my mind and body separated. All right. There's no bodhicitta. no compassion, nothing. You know, there are three people inside. No thinking about them. I'm just running out of my life. And I fell down. I thought, oh, now that's it. It's over now. I just lay there, you know, so that nothing happened. I looked back. Somehow, yeah, they decided to go back. So they didn't do anything. They just let me. So then I started worrying about my camera. So like that, you know. Oh, so chased by, you know. All of that, you know, in the dream, you know, in the dream, there's something you have dreamed. Milam Nyamsu, Yomash is my point here. In the dream, all kinds of things happen. You know, positive things, you get excited, then you get kind of like sad, and all kinds of things. When you wake up, it's just memory. It's just memory. Milam Nyamsu, Yomash, Mubokhamba, Khangchevas. Whatever we do, smell, touch, taste, see, feel, hear, all of that. No. When you're awake, it's like dream. Milam Nyamsu, Nyomash, Ubokhamba, Khangchevas, Tete, Tete, it just become mere memory. It's just memory. Devatamcha Tomi, just all the past, you are not going to see them. It's all the past, you are not going to see them again. It's past. It just become mere memory. So, what the stanza, what Shanti was trying to teach us, you know, is like everything is impermanent. Everything changes. You're so vivid, it's now just become memories. Everything changed. Devatamcha Tomi, just so just want to share that with you. So we don't know how much time we have on this planet, on this earth, we don't know. In reality, we don't know how much time we have. So we should not waste to being miserable. Waste to being miserable. No? We do have power to change. you need guts to change. So every day, so yesterday's past, now today, you know, when you wake up, so that's what we should think. You know, life is precious, fragile, unpredictable, so. So then, you know, make the best out of this precious life. Make the best out of this precious life. So how you do? Think something good. Think something positive. So some people rely heavily on reciting prayers, and some people read a book. some people meditate, you know, so do review meditation, you know. So based on these three things, life is precious, fragile, unpredictable. Therefore, get the best out of it. Get the best out of it. Huh? You understand? My English is now not getting better; it's getting worse. So then, after the three, four questions, I'll read. If you don't mind, I'll read this question. So. So the first question is kind of the difficult one, but it says, sometimes I think your teaching is that emptiness is the idea that everything is illusions. I said everything's like illusion, not illusion. Everything's like illusions. It's very important to have word like here. It's like illusion, not illusion. So. Answer that ignorance is the belief in a true reality, sir. But then also you say that there is a true truth. I'm confused, sir. So I sympathize with you. I'm also confused too. So I'm not also free from this confusion, sir. So you are talking about the emptiness, and the most difficult subject in Buddhist philosophy, emptiness. So much has been said about emptiness, but very little gets into the deep down here. If you are very interested about meditation on emptiness, so first, whoever just asks questions, first, what you should do, my suggestion will be, that's called four-point analysis. Four-point analysis. So, among those four-point analysis, first one is to identify, called gagja. Then please read 4-point analysis. So I'm happy to meet you 101 after the class here at the table. So then we will have further discussion. So the first one, what happens? So much, books have been written about this. So much research has been done. So when you say I. That's everything began from there, I. So from first you become attached to I, tamu ngashe dana shenjuji. First you become attached to yourself, I. So then from there, dagi dishi. Then from there, my table, my house, my friend, my family, my community, my country, then all of that, rise. So then, that create kind of like cycles. Then it goes round and round, it never ends, it goes round and round. When you go to a remote part of Nepal, so then you see there's some farmer, they use this wheel. There's many, many small boxes attached to the wheel. That's how they get water into the rice field. Then it's like cycle of life goes like this, not like that. Never ends. It's called Sejungi Jumo. In Tibetan, So who said that? They said, Chandrakirti, the Indian master, entering into the middle way, the text he's composed called Entering into the Middle Way. In that text, Tambu Ngashe Dala Shenjuji. First you become attached to yourself, so then you become attached to, then mind, all of them goes on and on. So that create the cycles. They create the karma, their wheels, that goes round and round. So the first, whenever we say I, How you define self. How we define self. Maybe self that you are so, uptight or so clinging, maybe that self doesn't exist. It's just maybe there's something there, out of something there, but 99% is projected. So I'm not happy, but we don't bother to analyze, we just go with that, you know. So when you say I, then you pause, then you analyze what is that, how you, if you feel like solid, absolute, inherent, that's mistake. That is mistake. That is ignorance. That is mistake. It's not the body. It's not aggregate. It's not the body. It's not the air you breathe. It's not the liquid inside the body. Jebu sami chuma is. Jebu, being. It's not solid part of the body, you know, like that include teeth, bone, nails. It's not the cell. It's not the liquid. Chuma is not the liquid. Mimi is not the heat inside the body. Lumi is not the oxygen we breathe. It's not the cell. Chivusami chuma, mimi lumi namu. Mimi lumi, chivusami chuma, mimi lumi namu. It's not the space within the body. It's not that. It's not the consciousness. So then what is it? So you go through the training, you know, the meditation, so. So that's the beginning. That's how meditation on entities began, with the self. So then out of there, so everything that, you know, is like, if you see objects as something absolute, inherent, then that's the problem. It's not like that. It's just call. It's call. Somebody call this prayer wheel. So then when you see prayer wheel. It's not like piece of wood become prayer wheel by itself. Somebody call. I was called. When I was born, I was nothing. Nothing is nobody. Then my parents called me Gelek. So then I become Gelek. So then when I finish my study in monastery, then I call Gishi, become title. Then I become Gishi Gelek. So then when I came here, so then I become resident teacher of Kadampa Center. So before that, everything is just called, it's just level. So now you say merely level, you know, and nothing from its own side, it's just level. And then top of that, we project, then it becomes very serious. Everything becomes serious. Oh. So serious, you know. So everything becomes so serious. So we project it. Particularly, especially when we get upset, angry, so the object, then, you know. His Holiness said, some scientists, you know, so somewhere from America, scientists told His Holiness, when we get angry, so 99% of the on object is projected. Can you imagine that out of 100%, just 1%, then all of this projected. So now here, you know, emptiness is the truth, ultimate truth. So now, how you define that? Now I'll briefly say something, but it may not going to make much sense. But I'm going to say anyway. So, you know, the way it appears, everything, you know, self and everything, the way it appears, the way it exists is different. That's called conventional truth. The way it appears is something inherent, solid, absolute, but that's not how it exists. It exists based on mere level. But we don't understand that. That's conventional truth. Ultimate truth, the way it appears, the way it exists is same. That's called ultimate truth, no? True truth, emptiness. emptiness. Oh. That's all I can say about emptiness. So now you see, I'm also confused too. It's not easy. So please, you read about four-point analysis, okay? So then we will sit one-on-one so that we can go through that, you know, four-point analysis. That's how you meditate on emptiness based on four-point analysis. So then you go through that. So that's how to meditate on emptiness. Then that's how to understand the merely level self. Nothing else, nothing more, nothing less. It's merely level self. Oh. So the second one, in Buddhist arts, what does the white elephant mean? So Yum Jumal Hanzi, the Shakyamuni Buddhist mother, in Sanskrit, Queen Maya, I think Queen Maya. Maya, that's probably the name of the Queen Maya, Jumalhanzi. So, so Jumalhanzi is like beautiful as an angel. That's Jumalhanzi. So before Buddha was born, she dreams about this six tusks, white elephant. Also, an elephant symbolizes power, steadiness, power. White power symbolizes purity. So here, this is called kata. See, it's the white scrap. It has now. It also a lot of, this also evolved, a lot of evolution. When I was in monastery, so you don't have this kata. So kata that you have now, you don't see them anymore. So this was called kata. Whenever you see important person or your friend, or whatever, when you greet, wedding ceremony, you know, any kind of, you know, special occasions, and you, before you say anything, you just offer that. What that signifies, that your intention is pure as white. There's nothing more. So you offer that, then the person who is receiving kind of sees that, you know, as your intention is pure, is white. You know, there's nothing like contaminated, you know. Then after that you talk. Okay? So white symbolizes purity. So, and same in the Buddhist art, whenever you see the white color, it symbolizes purity or kind of symbolizes purification. Purification symbolizes that. Oh. Then, what is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? So, what is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? So, as I said, the wisdom, generally speaking, the definition of wisdom is mind that's capable to distinguish between positive and negative. That is wisdom. Temba Miva Dimba things the share of the what we call five omnipresent mental factors. Every primary thought, main thought comes with these five mental factors. Attentions, then after wisdoms, you know, able to distinguish between positive and negative. So, what is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? I'm asking you. Please say something. What is the difference? What's the difference between wisdom and knowledge?
I may have knowledge of something, or I've read something, or, you know, intellectually I get it, but if I'm not practicing it, and gaining experience with that idea, then I don't develop wisdom.
Hmm.
It just stays in my head as, oh, that's a nice concept.
Hmm. So is the order between wisdom and knowledge, if there's order?
I think knowledge becomes wisdom if you practice what you've learned.
So wisdom is the result.
Is the result,
yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so then yeah. We both agree. So yeah, that's what I thought. Wisdom is the byproduct of knowledge, yeah.
I think that knowledge is information that you acquired from anything that you do, you see, hear, smell, your world in which you are, while wisdom is the way that you apply what you know to have a better life, to do good things. In other words, to apply it in a positive manner. So information, you gather information. I mean, knowledge is information, while wisdom is the way you use it for a positive, in a positive way.
What's the general meaning, definition of wisdom? What's the general definition of wisdom? How you define, in Buddhist philosophy, every word we study based on the definitions.
So my understanding is that wisdom is awareness of, and knowledge in that aspect. And knowledge in that aspect would be an intellectual property, like seeing something and labeling it, or having an understanding in your mind. So wisdom is awareness of that, awareness of the fact that you're labeling it, awareness of the fact that you're understanding your mind. That's just what comes to my mind.
Awareness of the object, or awareness of positive or negative, or
So ultimately, awareness of. Being able to see and observe your knowledge, an understanding that it's both limited and it's beyond my ability to explain
it. Very good, wonderful, yeah.
Well, it's my understanding from background and whatnot, and just thinking, is that we have data, we have information, and then we have knowledge, and then we have wisdom. And in the web of interdependence that we have in the world, each level takes us a broader perspective of that web. So data is just a point. Information, we begin to put more points together. With knowledge, we've expanded that web of understanding. And with wisdom, we're able to see even a greater area, even more of the web, and how things are interdependent.
Very good, wonderful. So, yeah.
Is wisdom just simply the, not simply, but the knowing how things exist? So that's the simple party line, right? So if we know how things exist, we have wisdom. And that takes care of everything else once we understand that.
Is that the definition of wisdom in the West? In the English language, how does how?
Oh, I thought you said the Buddhist definition.
No, okay. Not talking about Buddhist definition. No.
Scratch.
So I looked it up.
That's easy vision.
I just figured I would Google it with my smartphone. So knowledge versus wisdom. This is what the internet says. So knowledge is composed of facts, information, and skills, whereas wisdom is composed of knowledge, experience, and good judgment. So knowledge gives the ability to identify whether some fact is true or false, whereas wisdom gives you the ability to discern whether some idea is right or wrong. Knowledge is acquisition of information and facts, whereas wisdom is application of acquired knowledge. And knowledge can be simply acquired through education, whereas wisdom cannot be simply acquired through learning.
Yeah, good judgment, that part kind of sums up good judgment.
I would say that intention has a big component to wisdom, is intentions.
I looked it up as well, and it says the soundness of an action or decision with regard to the application of experience, knowledge, and good judgment. And it seems to me, I can acquire knowledge, lots of knowledge. In the application, I can apply my knowledge in how to hurt you.
Huh.
It is, and I, for me, it's the application of knowledge with compassion, which is something I don't know anything about. But I think that maybe that's the difference between wisdom and knowledge. For me, it's how I apply. I can apply knowledge to create a bomb, or I can apply it to feed people. And maybe it is in the application, and if I divide that with compassion, it becomes very different, maybe useful.
Yeah, very good. So now do we all agree that wisdom is ability to distinguish between positive and negative?
Yes.
So now I was wondering again, you know, like, how many kinds of wisdom? How many different kinds of wisdoms? Different kinds of wisdoms.
Why do they have to be kinds of wisdom?
Huh?
I thought that wisdom was just general.
So, according to Buddhist philosophy, you know, Tujungi Sherab means, two means, you know, hear, you hear something. You hear something, then you develop wisdom or awareness or wisdom, you develop that. So then, usually people use that for their own gain, you know, pretty much. Wisdom is generated by hearing something, you know, through discussion, hearing something. And that's the first, called Tujungi Sherab, you know. So then the second type of wisdom is Samjungi Sherab. Then you think about, you thought about that, whatever you heard. You thought about that. So that's a little bit better. Samjungi Sherab, then you know that wisdom, awareness produced by thinking, not just, you know, just one time here, and then thinking about that, you know. So then, last wisdom, Gomjungi Sherab, then the awareness is produced by meditations. Meditation, deep meditation. That wisdom then liberates, frees, you know. So then, not just thought, you know, you've been thinking about that again, till you reach to the aha moment. Aha moment. So then you say, oh, then that's called Gomjungi Sherab. So then, you know, that kind of, free, you know, ourselves from the problem. So so now, maybe only a few minutes left. So the last question is now here. There's three questions. Can Buddhist monks and nuns have sex? Maybe the past life. Maybe you don't know about life of this. But this life, as there's no. You know, so in Tibetan, particularly Tibetan Buddhist traditions, once you take vows, this rest of your life, you know. And but that doesn't mean you don't have choice. You have choice. You can give up. No, or you can stay, you know. Or it's not like that when you join the monastery, then it's not like you going to the prison camp, no. You can, like the monks dissolve, nuns dissolve, you know, you see them quite often, you know, so it's not particular in the Western, or in the West, or in the West, in the West. Oh. It's hard, it's not easy. So then now the second question, so, this question goes on. So, can Buddhist monks have nuns have sex and get married? Then some traditions, like Thailand, you can become monks. You can go to monastery, become monk. They say almost every man become monks in sometime in their life. You know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. So then come back. So. But there are some discussions taking place, but you know, the discussion didn't get any support in Tibetan community, Tibetan, you know, like Buddhist congregations. So not one person can make decisions. You know, when this kind of discussions, all the head of the monastery needs to agree to change. That's what Buddha, before he passed away,
He said, any big decisions, then all the big monastery, head of the big monastery, they all come together, then discuss. Of course, now His Holiness Dalai Lama, he is very much, I say, open-minded. He's thinking much, much bigger than our own culture. He's thinking, his mind is going way beyond, like, religious belief, you know, and he's very much thinking, you know, like, about, based on the realities. So I think this subject did bring up in discussions, and then probably His Holiness doesn't get much support from the head of the monastery, so then no further discussion is finished. So this is now a lifetime commitment, no? Then the second question is, what exactly is attachment? That's very interesting questions. What we see is delusions, what is reality? Illusion. Illusion or delusion? If what we see is a delusion, what's reality, sir? So now please contribute a little bit here. What is attachment? What is attachment? And I think the third part of the question, if what we see is a delusion, what do we see as a delusion, sir? Now this is getting a little bit complicated here. Does it make sense? What we see is a delusion. So I don't understand. So anyway, no. If you understand.
What we see is a delusion.
That was obviously my question.
Is your question?
Yes. If what we see is a delusion,
What do you mean delusions?
Delusion. If what we see is delusions.
What is
delusions? Are delusions. Or an illusion.
Not real.
If it's not real,
if
it is a false perception, then what is reality is reality?
No, now this very get a little bit complicated. Real, like the definition of real, this get a little bit complicated. So you don't say, okay, yeah, reality, you know, like you get upset, you get angry, you get happy, you get hurt. This is not just delusion, it's real,
mm-hmm.
Right? It's real. So now, what is the reality? From the emptiness point of view, the reality is much, much deeper than general meaning of reality. It's like, you know, reality based on five objects of, you know, like form, taste, smell, tactile, sound, based on those five desirable objects. So based on that, so then generally speaking, real, unreal, I don't know what to say. So now then we'll move to the second question. What is exactly attachment? What is exactly attachment? Yeah, please say something. No pressure, but if you want to say something. What is exactly attachment? As I said, according to Buddhist philosophy, we study attachment, jealousy, each one of different definitions of wisdom. That's how you study in Buddhist philosophy. Everything's based on definitions. So I was wondering, what is exactly attachment? Yeah.
The reason I was asking, that's another question.
Mm.
The reason I was asking that is because there is one of our, prayers or tantras, whatever they're called, that says, allow me to detach from friends and everything else. And I'm saying to myself, really? How can I do this?
Mm.
How can I detach from, let's say, my friend here, or a man that I love? It's, if we detach, in my opinion, if I do not have a certain type of bonding, to me attachment is bond, bonding, then I think
on
that...
Internet.
That I think
on
that
internet. On the internet, what it says.
No. I think that then also we fall into a problem where we have no passion. When we become detached, we don't feel anymore. We don't have that connection that allows us to empathize.
Yeah, I understand. So that's like, that's not true. So that's not true. So I don't have any, no, so I'm not saying that, you know, I'm free from attachment, not at all. I probably have tons of attachments. So, but, you know, based on the book, so, first just want to see what's in the internet.
Hmm.
They have no meaning?
No, there is.
Attachment.
If you have an attachment to someone or something, you are fond of them or loyal to them. I mean, there's different forms of attachment, but I think that attachment in Buddhism is very different than the attachment of the, in terms of the American language is concerned.
Yeah, how American define attachment?
Yeah, attachment would be being loyal to someone or being bonded with like an infant or a toddler, a primary caregiver, a strong bond being vital for a child's normal behavior and social development.
Yeah, that's
an enduring emotional bond that develops between one adult and another in an intimate relationship, romantic attachment.
Yeah.
And that's very different than I think what we're saying in terms of Buddhism attachment. From what I've learned and what I've studied is like attachment is grasping and clinging in an unhealthy manner, so that, you know, for example, if I'm attached to my fiance, right, and I'm so attached in a way that is suffocating and is very like I can't live with or without that person, right, and that person goes away from me and I'm completely miserable and I'm falling apart, then that's like unnecessary grasping and clinging and portraying my happiness on that individual or on that thing. That could be food, that could be clothing, that could be materialistic possession. So it's that unnecessary grasping and clinging. So I think in Buddhism it's like not having that grasping and clinging. Obviously, you can love someone or love something, but without attachment, which is really, really hard.
Am I explaining that right? It's not easy.
I'd just like to say that from a Buddhist standpoint, it's my understanding that attachment is the exaggeration of the qualities of an object which makes it desirable. That it is an exaggeration, which means that you no longer see that thing as it is, but you exaggerate it, and it becomes desirable, which leads to clinging and attachment.
Mm-hmm.
I think before you can go into attachment, you have to understand ignorance, ignorance is the foundation of all our ignorance, meaning we think things are a certain way, and that's why we attach to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fundamental ignorance about how things exist, and the attachment comes because of that.
Very good, wonderful.
The person who phrased the question, they were talking about being detached. I'm not sure what prayer she was looking at. The prayer that I'm used to reading says free of attachment, which is different than being detached. Being detached does have a negative connotation to it. But the prayer that we read almost every Sunday in here says free from attachment, which has a different connotation. It's, you can still have friends. It's saying free from attachment to friends. You still have the friends, but not being, I think as Amanda was saying, clinging.
So the one example they use in the from text, I don't remember which text, is like sitting in the wet leather pouch. Pouch. What is the beginning? You can stretch, you know. It's comfortable. Then, like when time goes by, then it's become dry, and it's become tighter. So that's one example they use. And also another example they use, like drop of oil on the piece of paper. The beginning is just one drop, then it's so slowly hard to get out. So, you know, like, yeah, you exaggerate, you know, of course, you know, according to emptiness point of view, there's not absolute beauty, it's all level, you know, so there's not one beauty that everybody agrees, is a beauty, you know. How is it, you say also, they're saying in English, beauty is the beholder of the
mind of the beholder.
Yeah, beauty is mind of the beholder. So that's not after the beauty, so it's just in the level. So then, yeah, then the beginning is not a problem. So then after that, you impose something. You exaggerate something. It's not there, you know. So then becomes so... Then it becomes so tight, you know, so then flexibility that you lose. So then, you know, as I said, you know, not just people, you know, being attached to French fry from McDonald's. Then when you, yeah, so you have that. Then on the other hand, you have another attachment to want to climb Mount Everest. Mount Everest in Nepal. Then you go all the way up there, then you not let to go the craving for French fry. So the French fry from McDonald's doesn't exist there at all. So then you go to some restaurants and you see the menu, they say, oh, French fry. Then you get so excited. Then you order one, it doesn't taste like French fry at all. It tastes something else, you know. So that like that, that not being flexible, you know. So then that do cause, so inconvenient. Not like, you know, any toothbrush, the basically to clean your tooth, but doesn't satisfy, it has to be a very particular one. So then you run here, run there, you know, run. So like that, you know. So anyway, doesn't mean you should not love. Of course, you know, love is the foundation of our existence. We have to have love, you know. So, but clinging so tightly and thinking, oh, there should be forever, that goes against reality. Nothing is forever. Everything changes, you know. So everything changes. People grow and everything changes, you know. So then... needs a lot of knowledge, you know, so before you become to love someone, you have to understand the person has mind, the person's mind is not going to be same all the time, the person's body is going to change, the mind is going to change, actions are going to change, you are going to change, your body is going to change. You have to be aware of the change, impermanent. So then, probably that will probably help the love will last longer, you know, if you have all this knowledge. So without that, you know, so then all kind it leads to all kind of problems. Eventually it will squeeze you. You know, just got dried up, squeeze there, you don't know how to get out. Just get tighter and tighter. Okay, yeah. So now time is over, so there's something to do here. Yeah.
So I think it's very appropriate that this morning Geshe was talking about emptiness, because we come in on Sunday mornings and we say, well, here's Sunday morning teachings. Or we come on Monday night to Discovering Buddhism and we're coming to this Discovering Buddhism that exists from its own side. Or we come to introductory classes and it's if they just exist, but they actually depend upon so many factors, and one of the most besides the fact that I can't speak, one of the most essential factors of that is the people who make these things happen. And so this morning we're going to take a few moments and thank many of the volunteers who help with the spiritual program here at Kadampa Center. And I got excited and left my list over here, I think. So we have with us today only one of our precious nuns, but she's very precious, Venerable Lamo, our chant master, who leads us in our prayers on Sunday morning. She leads Sunday morning meditation. She leads, she's a chant master for all our pujas. So Venerable Lamo, do come up and let Geshe-la thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And I'll just mention that Venerable Chuki helps a great deal with advice to me, and she'll help me find texts when I need them, and I know she also gives a lot of support to Geshe-la and Geshe Sangpo And Venerable Kondo is also very supportive of the children's program, and she steps in a lot of ways and also supports Geshe Sangpo. Next is Robbie Watkins, director of the Kadampa Center for eons and eons. He's a discovering Buddhism teacher.
Thank you.
And he is, he's just amazing in his willingness to step in at sometimes 5 minutes notice, and help with anything and always very cheerfully. And then if you've got the email that I'm going to be thanking you, why don't you kind of start gathering so we can do this kind of quickly. I don't see Steve Smith. She is also one of our Discovering Buddhism teachers and has been serving for a very long time. She also hosted Geshe-la in her house for many years. Don Brown, who's another Discovering Buddhism teacher. I don't see him today. And it's January. The flu has felled a lot of us. Hemant Pandya is also, he taught in Meditation 101 for many years, and now he is starting out as a Discovering Buddhism teacher. And then I also want to thank Erin Sloan. She is the program assistant for Discovering Buddhism. And she also helps me with planning the spiritual programs. Jill Marie, you all know her as our center manager and administrator, but she is also teaches the Saturday meditation, first Saturday meditation and the Meditation 101 course.
I just want to say this is the gift their center is giving, prayer flex. You see here, prayer flex, you know, the mini prayer flex. So that, you know, according to Buddhist belief, so there's a lot of prayers been written on that, and the color symbolizes five elements. So when you hang that, when the wind blows, you know, it carries kind of the message. Then the wind that touch living beings benefits. So that's the, I just want to explain. Yeah, thank you.
And then we have Gary Mickey, who is our Sunday morning program assistant, and he helps get the microphones around to you, and he also is just one of those folks who's willing to help in a lot of little ways.
Thank you for that.
David Mackless. David Mackless is our Meditation 101 teacher.
Thank you, David.
Yes.
Joanna Smith, she's saying, what am I doing here? She was a program assistant for Discovering Buddhism for the last cycle. And even though we're thanking folks today for helping here at the center, she also was very instrumental in the last two Light of the Past retreats and deserves big thanks. Karen Mastroianni is our, she teaches, leads Buddhism in a nutshell for many years, and she is also our teacher driver coordinator. So Geshe-la gets here thanks to Karen's work. Elise Strievel is a Buddhism in a nutshell leader. She's one of the people who hosts visiting teachers when they come, and she's also someone who's very helpful in so many ways. So.
Thank you.
Patrick McGinnity is our Holy Days coordinator, and he helps with all of that. And he helps with so many things, I can't even name them all. The altar also helps with Light of the Path retreat, and he's just a wonderful, always willing to be there guy. Susie Bohm is also a, she's a program assistant with, on Sunday mornings, and she's also now working on the team that will coordinate visiting teachers.
Thank you very much.
She also coordinated Discovering Buddhism.
Oh, and she also helps with coordinating Discovering Buddhism. And, of course, our wonderful media guys, Chris Baranski and Brian Dyer. They make it possible for us to hear the teachings here and also to hear it streaming if you're not able to be here. Lee, don't be shy. Come up and come on.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Lee Clark helps you. Yeah, well, I could just in a lot of little ways. So come on up, Julia. Julia. Julia McCollum is helping me to organize Dharma materials that are in the files. Very, very helpful.
Thank you.
Susan Daniel, you also helped. Susan and Kim also helped with the Light of the Path retreat. Come and get your thank yous.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for your card.
Oh, Mike Flaherty, you know you should be up in this line. Come on.
Thank you.
Mike, Mike is always willing to help out. He helps every Sunday with the meditation, Sunday morning meditation with Venerable Lamo. Becca Zuvich, come on up. Becca was also a big help with the Light of the Path retreat. And I think I'm just going to name the other people on the list who aren't here today because it's just good to name people and thank them even if they can't be here to hear it. So we have Sandy Carlson, who is a Buddhism in a Nutshell leader. Hetty Hollyfield, who often acts as a program assistant for our introductory classes. Steve Hale also acts as a program assistant for our introductory classes, and he also leads the newcomer question and answer every month and helps people get oriented when they're here for the first time. Linda Saw is also working on the team to coordinate visiting teachers. Patty Pandya is helping me a lot with organizing things. Same with Diane Meyer. Karen Edwards has also been very helpful. Joan Lacey and Joey Gooch. These are all people we want to thank, even if they're not here today to get our appreciation. Let's give them some applause also.
And Geshe-la is, of course, asking Donna to come forward because we couldn't do it without Donna, our spiritual program coordinator. And Donna.
Thank you.
Okay, one more thing.
Oh, okay.
Am I on? Okay, thank you. Okay, that was very inspiring. We forget how many people are behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, making everything happen here at Kadampa Center. Well, I know everybody's very excited that we're winding up our annual appeal. There's only 3 more days for the really serious professional procrastinators to take part, and you know who you are. Our goal is 177,000. We're at 172,000. And this will meet 70% of our budget for the coming year. In the past, that figure, we've only met 40% of the budget with the annual appeal, and we've gradually been increasing it thanks to everyone's generosity. We had a number of pledge campaigns that were very successful this year. We have a total so far of 201 supporters for the center for their donations. The one-time supporters met their goal of 81,000. The monthly supporters are currently at 91,000, and we want them to get to 96,000 over the next 3 days. We have 20 new monthly supporters, and 28 supporters from last year increased their pledge this year. And we have 33 new one-time supporters, and 18 from last year who increased their pledge. So there's 2.5 days left, so get on the train before it leaves the station. So we want to say a big thank you. And not only do we thank you, but we respect you. And so I'm going to introduce the Kadampa Center Ladies of Soul.
I
dedication on page 246 in the Gold Prayer Book, 246. And it's on the back of the Kadampa Center prayer list if you have the white binder. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.